Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning, July 31st. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on NPR's WLIW. And you can hear the show live online at WLIW.org/radio. And each show is distributed on my podcast at Audio Boom and iTunes. And each show is also archived on my website at AnneLiguori.com. So this morning, I take you to an incredible golf destination in northern Idaho. Yes, there's just so many great spots in our own country to visit. And Circling Raven Golf Club on the Coeur d'Alene Indian Reservation and the Coeur d'Alene Resort Golf Course, known for its par 3 14th floating green, which has to be one of the most photographed golf holes on the planet. Those are two courses well worth your visit. So they're both so picturesque. Circling Raven is situated on over 600 acres of land. You can see the mountains in the background with valleys, meadows, rolling terrain, so many different colors. It looks like a painting. It is just so gorgeous. The course was designed by Gene Bates, and this morning you'll hear Gene's thoughts on designing and building the course on the Indian Reservation and how very special it was working with members of the Coeur d'Alene Reservation. And it was a treat to connect with David Matheson, the founder and former CEO of Coeur d'Alene Casino and Resort. David is a Native American, part of the Coeur d'Alene tribe, and boy, what an impressive background. He served as an official appointee in the administration of George H.W. Bush from 1990 to 93 as head of the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs, successfully managing over 13,000 employees with an annual budget of over $1 billion. He also handled the office's construction management, responsible for the design and building of many facilities for the department. He was appointed to two different presidential commissions by two different U.S. presidents. Ronald Reagan appointed him to the President's Commission of Reservation Economies, and George W. Bush appointed him to the President's Commission on Tribal Colleges and Universities. So very impressive. David Matheson will join us this morning, and you'll hear his background, a little bit of his background, and how he actually got this gorgeous golf course, Circling Raven Golf Club, and the Coeur d'Alene Casino and Resort off the ground and running beautifully. It's very successful. We also visit with Taylor Ford, the National Sales Director for Coeur d'Alene Resort Golf Club, situated on beautiful Lake Coeur d'Alene. It's about a 30-minute drive from the Coeur d'Alene Casino and Resort, and this course with the floating green is just spectacular. It was designed by Scott Miller and inspired by the late Dwayne Hagedon, the owner of the resort and golf course there. And that floating green is quite something. You take a boat from the tee area to the floating green. The green is actually on a pulley, and it can be moved and changed distances. That floating green, you know, gets most of the attention, but there's so many holes in that golf course that are just exceptional and just beautiful. There are back-to-back par threes on the front that are gorgeous and just so much fun to play. There are a lot of long par fours and challenging par fives. And if you can plan a trip out there, you will enjoy playing both courses. You basically fly from JFK to Spokane, Washington, and then it's about a 45-minute drive across the border to Idaho and to these various golf courses and resorts. The big news of the week, of course, came from the Olympics in Tokyo with Simone Biles withdrawing from both the gymnastics all-around competition and the individual competition. Boy, what a shame. But probably the best choice for the most decorated gymnast in the world. She said she was not mentally prepared to continue. And if you are not 100% mentally prepared and able, there is just too much risk of injury and danger in the extremely difficult moves that she does. Many of those moves named after her because she's the only one who can actually pull them off. But, you know, good for her that she had enough strength to recognize that she isn't 100% mentally with all the pressure, all the expectations, everything that she was experiencing, and I'm sure we don't know one-tenth of it, it just must be so much pressure and so much stress. And there's so many things that are, I'm sure, going on that she has to deal with on that level. And I think it took an enormous strength for her to bow out. I mean, everybody's disappointed. We'd love to see her do what she did back at the Olympics in 2016 in Rios. You know, she hasn't lost an all-round competition since 2013 when she was 16. She's 24 now. But, you know, what we're seeing really is an end of an era. She was just an incredible performer, incredible gymnast, did so many incredible stunts. I watched a documentary about her on the plane, actually, on the way to Idaho. And, you know, she was a foster child, was bounced around a lot from different foster families when she was young and before she settled. I think it was with her grandparents who actually were able to take her in and give her a great home. Her mother had drug and alcohol issues, and she had talent right away. I mean, for tumbling and for doing all kinds of just incredible gymnastics moves. So, you know, and she was expected to win gold in at least three of the four events. So in her absence in the all-around competition this past week, the Russians actually won the gold medal for the first time in a long time, and the Americans took the silver. So it will be interesting to see, you know, how the Americans do in the individual competition without Simone Biles. But I guess good for her that she did pull out and had enough strength to do that. You know, when you're older, you have a lot of mental scar tissue. I guess when you're younger, you know, you just go with it and you just focus better on performing the task at hand and what you've been training for so diligently for so much of your life. But when you get older, you know, maybe common sense and wisdom kind of kicks in perhaps. And, you know, she just said, listen, I just can't do it. So no criticism on my part toward her. I admire her for having the strength to make a very difficult decision and to stick with it. We're going to take a quick break and come back, and you'll hear my conversation with Jean Bates, the designer of Circling Raven Golf Club. Then you'll hear from Taylor Four of the Coeur d'Alene Resort Golf Club, and we'll end with the impressive Dave Matheson, the former CEO and founder of Coeur d'Alene Casino and Resort, and the golf course called Circling Raven. We'll be back. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Jean Bates, who has been a golf course designer for over 40 years. He's the owner of Bates Golf Design Group. Jean, welcome to Sports Interview.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about Circling Raven in Idaho. What a special place. I know it's made Golf Magazine's top 100 golf destinations for several years, and you designed it about 20 years ago. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on Circling Raven.
Well, I think maybe the most unique beginning with Circling Raven is that it was a competition between designers. And one that you might know is David Kidd. Oh. And he was part of the design competition. But unfortunately, the guys didn't get very competitive. I went to the reservation near Worley, or in Worley, and I spent like 3 days walking all the land. And I came up with an idea that was totally different from what everyone else was anticipating. Everyone wanted to build a golf course on the driving range side of the highway, Highway 95. And I thought, that's rather boring over there. And so I went to the opposite side of the road where the casino is. And there was just a variety of environments over there, open fields. We had wetlands. We had some forested area. And I just came up with a routing that I displayed and talked to the tribe about, that this would be the most interesting place for the course, and that others not going to get much recognition. And I think based on that and the relationship that I quickly developed with Dave Matheson and Ernie Stensgar, they hired me. So that was the beginning part.
And I had the pleasure of talking to Dave Matheson, who was the founder and CEO of the casino there, and obviously part of the tribe, the Coeur d'Alene tribe. And boy, what a special guy. Talk about Dave Matheson and your connection with him.
Well, the connection is rather unique in the sense that, Dave's a very learned man and very well respected, not only with his own tribe, but just about all the tribes in the country. He sat on the board of the Bureau of Indian Affairs back in Washington. I think he was specialized in Indian education. And so just, I believe, the back and forth that we had about different topics, not only golf course, but Indian world in general, kind of endeared us to each other. And the unique thing about how our relationship unfolded, he just threw in my lap. Just trust that is hard to attain, especially within the Indian world. Because quite frankly, I'm going to say this, and I'll get maybe some disagreement, but I'll get a lot of agreement. There's still a pretty good rift between Indians and white people, because it was a pretty tenacious thing that the white people did to the Indians as they moved across the country. And so Dave just gave me really unlimited, do what you need to think needs to be done. And I trusted him for that. And I kept that trust. And we tried to really be sensitive with the budget. They did pay for the golf course out of their cash flow from the casino. So that's rather unique and well done. But every time I needed to see Dave, I had access to him. And kind of the question that I'd walk in and get from him would be, you have everything you need, Gene? And I never said once, no, I'm needy. So that was that relationship.
Well, I have to tell you, when I first saw the golf course, it sits on over 620 acres of incredible land. And you can see for miles and miles, you see the mountains in the background, as you mentioned, the wetlands, the woodlands, there are meadows, there's tall grass, there's just such a variety of terrain. And what I loved about it is that you could see for miles and miles, no housing development, which was so special, the fact that it's just all natural land and a variety of land, so many different terrains.
Well, exactly. That's what makes that place unique. And then you throw in the blend of wildlife that roam around there. During the wintertime, we've got elk on the property. There are moose that go up and down the wetlands. Of course, there's always coyotes hanging around everywhere. And we've got a lot of mule deer. So, you know, it's just it's a paradise when you think about how unspoiled and how we blended the golf course into what was there to begin with.
Obviously, you're known for specific design philosophy. How does that design philosophy fit in with what you did at Circling Raven?
Well, my big bugaboo about design philosophy is playability. I worked for Jack Nicklaus for 5 years. And when I left the Nicklaus companies in 1988, my wife and I and my son were out at the what is now the Honda Championship at PGA. Was it Honda or maybe it was something else? But anyway, the seventh hole on the championship course is a long par three with about 100 yards of carry from the middle tee across to the ground on the other side. And I said to my wife, I said, can you play this hole? Maybe. My son said, I can, Dad, but it's too hard. Now, David was 8 years old and a pretty good player at that point in time. And so right with those two little comments, I thought, thought, you know what? The people that need the help don't get it when you come to the forced carries and the degree of difficulty. And so my challenge and my philosophy moving forward was, come on, let's make this fun. Let's make it not so much a difficult challenge, but a fair challenge. And so each and every golf course that I've designed, I've tried to keep that in mind. And then we were just in Tallahassee the other day, and this is Fred Couples and Gene Bates golf course at Southwood that we built. Now, this has been 20 years ago. And I came up with the idea of the wee tees. And the wee tees are tees that are moved down the fairway, closer and suitable for young kids, for grandparents, just something that makes the golf course enjoyable for people that aren't accomplished in the game and want to learn it. So the wee tees are still in use, and proud to say that the community there enjoys them.
Well, the Circling Raven plays 7,189 yards if you choose to play it from the back tees. And, you know, I just thought, as you say, the playability was a huge factor, very enjoyable. But, you know, when the wind picks up, that made it challenging because you were constantly guessing, okay, is it a one-club wind? Is it a two-club wind? So you can make it as tough on yourself as you want to based on the tees, the variety of tees there. And then the wind also makes it challenging.
That's true. It's exactly right. Typically, the wind comes out of the northwest, and we tried to keep that in consideration when we did the layout and the routing, but not always. Sometimes it comes directly out of the south, and when it does that, it's kind of like, oh boy, some of these holes are either crosswind or into the wind directly, and so it just makes it that much more of a challenge and a little more difficulty to figure it out.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Taylor Foer, the National Sales Manager for Coeur d'Alene. Here we are in Coeur d'Alene in northern Idaho, and boy, what a treat to be here. I've heard so much about this golf course and the resort, Taylor, and it's great to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. Thanks for making the trip, and we're hoping that you're enjoying your time here.
Having a great time. The golf course is everything I expected it to be. I just had the best time out there. Talk a little bit about the course, and of course, the par 3 14th signature hole, where you literally take a boat to the green. It's a floating green, and the only floating green on the planet, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Our owner, Dwayne Hagedon, at the time, when he bought our property, he wanted to make a unique golf hole, and it was an old mill site, our property was, and so they cut down the trees and they floated them across the lake, and he saw that and he thought, you know, it'd be really cool to have a green out there. So that was the vision behind the floating green, and it's been something that he's been very proud of, and we're certainly proud of it. And yeah, it's a unique hole and part of the whole golf experience, taking the putter boat over and getting a chance to play that hole. It's really special.
How do you think he came up with that that idea? Because it's so unique and it's such a marketing tool for the property. Plus, I'm sure it's one of the most photographed holes in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, he never quite said, he always says it's the most expensive golf green ever. There was no blueprint for making a floating green, but it was just a vision that he had, and he worked with lots of people. Essentially, it was his own boat or barge, you know, big enough to make that green, and we floated it over. And two winters ago was the first time we ever detached it. So it's on a cable system, a pulley system, so we can actually move the green in or move the green away from the shore depending on the water level of the lake. And so in the wintertime, we bet we pull it back as far as we can because the lake's a little bit more shallow. And then as the water level rises during the season, we bring the green in. And so over 25, 27 years of having the green, and we top dress it every season just like a normal green would be top dressed, it started to weigh itself down. So we detached the green, we floated it over to a dock, and we did some major maintenance on it. And we took off 2 tons of dirt and soil from underneath the green, and it allowed it to raise up a little bit higher out of the water, and gave us a chance to rebuild the contour of the green to the original the original specs. And it's also important to us with that green. Obviously, it's its own ecosystem because we don't want fertilizer going into the lake. We want to keep our lake beautiful. And so we make sure that as things have changed over the last 25 to 30 years, we want to make sure that the practices that we have for the green itself aren't contaminating the lake. And so, yeah, it's really an art. There's no, like I said, no blueprint for it. And our team has done a great job. Scott's been great coming back and working with our team to make sure that we're doing everything we can for the environment and everything to make, preserve that green and make it special.
So talk about the area and the lake. How deep is the lake where that island green is?
There's a big shelf underneath the lake. And so if you were to go, we have a scuba diver that goes out and does retrieve the golf balls every season. So that's important to know that we do have a licensed scuba diver go out there, and there's a shelf underneath it. And so it's probably for the most part about 40 foot deep. And then the shelf, you know, obviously goes down much deeper the further you go out. So the water is really clear. So sometimes it looks like it's a lot closer than it is, but it is fairly deep out there underneath it.
I love it. I've got my certificate that I'm going to frame and put in my office at home that I actually hit the green off the tee there. So really excited, made the par. And it's just such a great hole. But there's so much else to talk about the golf course. You have back-to-back par threes on the front that are just stunning. You have some, you know, very tough par fours, long par fours. Talk a little bit about some of the other signature holes on the golf course.
Absolutely. So in the early 90s, when our course was being designed and made, the theme at the time for golf courses was to build very challenging, hard golf courses. Kapalua, the plantation course, is one that opened the same year. And as you see it every January on tour, it's a very hard, challenging golf course. And our owner, he did a lot of study and he worked with our team, and he came back and realized that a vast majority, over 90% of golfers, are not scratch golfers. They don't really want to be that challenged. And so we wanted to make a fun golf course. We wanted folks leaving the Coeur d'Alene Resort saying, wow, that was the best round I had. That was, you know, the most fun I've had playing golf. And so they really stayed to that throughout the, you know, if we made modifications to the golf course. You notice, for example, on hole number one, if you miss it short right on your approach shot, it's just a down grassy area. Well, originally that was a sand bunker. The average golfer is going to miss short to the right. So it's going to be in that bunker. And so that's going to penalize the average golfer. And so instead the bunker's on the long left drive, you know, off the tee, long left drive, you're going to be in the bunker there. And so they've done a really good job of adapting the golf course to make sure that it's challenging the better player. And for the guest that maybe doesn't play as much, they're not going to be penalized for their play. Yeah, definitely the back-to-back par threes are special, five and six. Hole number five originally was a little bit to an elevated green. And over time, we've knocked the rock out. We lowered that green. So now it's kind of three greens in one. It looks kind of like a fidget spinner, but allows you to have a more of a downhill shot. And again, we've just adapted to make the golf course fun, enjoyable. We want folks having a great time when they come to play our course.
Well, I love the par four 13th right along the water. Oh, absolutely. You know, that's just a lot of fun. You take like this little bridge out to the tee boxes, and then you have to, you know, there's water before you get to the green, and water on the lake on the left. That's a stunning hole.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very high risk reward. You can the long hitters can try to go for it in one. I know when John Daly was here in the early 90s for the shootout that we hosted, he drove it onto the green. And so there's a high risk there, but obviously the lake's to your left. And if you miss it on the right side, those bunkers could make it challenging. But a beautiful golf hole there on 13. And that's the thing about the course, a lot of risk-reward holes. You know, 17 is another short par four that you can hit it on the green, but you can also, if you miss it left or miss it right, you're either in the road or you're in the trees. 15 is another short par five, but if you miss it to the right side, those trees can really handcuff you. So again, the idea is to let folks come out, have a great time, enjoy themselves, have a chance to have low scores, but it's still challenging. It's not an easy cakewalk through the course.
No, and it's very challenging, but so picturesque. And so the architect was a gentleman named Scott Miller. And I'm wondering, I'm sure he worked very closely with the owner. It just seemed like the owner was very hands-on.
Absolutely. Yeah, he definitely, Mr. Hagedorn was very involved in the process, designing the course, and Scott did a great job with it. He delivered exactly what Mr. Hagedorn wanted as far as a playable course that was challenging but fun. And like I said, he's been great through the years. He's checks in with us. He comes back out. He plays. As we do renovations and we do upgrades, he's definitely involved in that. And so Scott's been a great partner of the resort through our golf course.
So what does the resort consist of? I know we're going over to see the resort a little later, have dinner there, but talk a little bit about the entire property.
Sure. So the hotel itself has 338 guest rooms located right on the lake. And so the property, again, you'll see it tonight, but each side of the property is two city parks. So lots of green space. The front door is right on Sherman Avenue. It's the main drag of Coeur d'Alene. over 100 shops, bars, restaurants within walking distance from the hotel. And then the backside of the property is right on Lake Coeur d'Alene. So it's a beautiful backdrop to the property. And we've got three different room types that fit, you know, different price points for folks. We have almost any activity you could think of when it comes to getting on the water. We've got private cruise boats that can be used. We've got daily public cruises that go on. We have cobalt rentals, pontoon boat rentals, jet skis. We have lots of activities when groups come to the property they can utilize. We have our own on-site DMC that helps organize those activities for you. We have lots of local partners that help you if you want to go on a bike ride, you want to go on a trail, lots of activities to do outside to get folks outside. Tubbs Hill is another public hill, right, access from the property. You can just go outside and enjoy yourself a nice little hike or walk. So there's almost endless things.
About some of the other events that you've had here, talk a little bit. I know there's a charity event that you're doing and it's coming up shortly, but talk a little bit about some of the major events that Coeur d'Alene has hosted.
Yeah, absolutely. The Community Cancer Fund is based out of Spokane, and it's a group of it's a group of folks there that created this charity to help give back to cancer patients, specifically children with cancer. And so they've done great things in our community in the Northwest, in Coeur d'Alene and in Spokane, raising money and giving back to the community. And so we're certainly happy to get to host that. And they bring in a slew of folks from Hollywood stars to athletes. Wayne Gretzky's been one that's always visited in the past and attended. The Rocket, Roger Clemens, I know he's been on your show, but he's been out and he's participated with it. We've had Alfonso Ribeiro, Shane Victorino. We've just had Mark Mulder came out 2 years ago for it. So we've had a lot of, and it's growing, and it's growing. And again, the Community Cancer Fund does a great job. The event's called The Showcase, and the Community Cancer Fund does a great job raising money for our community. And again, we're certainly happy to have it. We're excited to have it back next week. And it's really something that our community gets behind. We have a lot of folks come out on Saturdays open to the public. And so folks can come out for $20 and watch a lot of the stars play golf, and they have a great vibe with music and the grandstands, and very accessible for folks to come out and enjoy the day. But certainly happy to get to be a part of that.
That's awesome. Grant, I know Grant Furr talks about it, the five-time Stanley Cup champion. He's a dear friend of mine. He came out. I host a tournament in the Hamptons, Taylor, to benefit cancer. And he came out. He was our honoree a couple years ago. This year, it's coming up in September at Maidstone Golf Club in East Hampton. So great cause. And, you know, you can never do enough to in the fight against cancer. So it's great to hear about that event. You know, when I look at this area, it reminds me, you know, it's first time here, reminds me of Lake Como in Italy. Do you hear that at all?
I've not heard that direct comparison, but I've definitely heard from overseas. It draws some correlations from over there. So I can see where you get that, but I personally have not heard that resemblance.
It's so nice. It's nice to have it in our country where, you know, from New York, it's really not a long flight. If we flew into Spokane, Washington, it's very accessible from, of course, the West Coast, but it's pretty easy to get here.
Absolutely. I think that's one thing that's confusing. First of all, when I go to trade shows or our team's out visiting, they think immediately, oh, Idaho, that's by Ohio. And so I think we get confused with the Midwest, but we are up. And then the confusion of Idaho and potatoes and Boise. So we're an 8-hour drive to Boise, and we're a 5-hour drive to Seattle. And so we're much closer for commerce when it comes to Spokane and Seattle than we are to Boise. And so that's some confusion. You do fly into Spokane, Washington, and then we're 40 minutes. It's an easy 40 minutes to get to our property. But I think there is some kind of confusion when folks see our photo or it's on Instagram, and then they're like, oh, I could never play that because, A, I don't know how to get there, or that must be overseas. But we are domestic, and we would love to earn your business and have you play our golf course. So
it's northern Idaho. And talk a little bit about the climate. It's stunning out there. You know, today it was just beautiful, really not too hot. I know there has been a bit of a heat wave out on the West Coast, but I'm sure, you get a little bit of everything throughout the summer and the winter.
Absolutely. So the summertime, typically, if you're on the averages, a mid-90s day would be really hot for us in the summer. So it usually sticks around upper 80s and low 90s. Humidity is about 20%. I mean, it's really not much humidity up here. So it's quite beautiful. Our golf course is open April through October, April and October being our shoulder season. If it's going to be wet, it's typically going to be more wet in the springtime in that April or May time frame. And then once June, July, August get here, it's really typically beautiful. September, that's when you get the colors changing as the leaves start to fall. and it's a beautiful time to play. And then October, still there's still some beautiful days in October. It could get a little wet on you or a little bit chillier, but still some plenty of days in the 70s in October to come play golf with us.
Talk about the name and what it means. It's a beautiful name.
So Coeur d'Alene is just the name of our community. It's the name of our town. And from my understanding is there's a Coeur d'Alene tribe. There's an Indian reservation just south of here. I think you stayed there with Circling Raven. But the tribe, I think that's where the name comes from. It's more of the area. And so we just wanted, Mr. Hagedorn just wanted to keep that the name of the community. And he visions the property as the community's property. I mean, it's a piece of our town. He's proud that it's, you know, family owned and that it's part of the community and not just a resort that people come to stay at. It's really part of our community, and he thought naming it that would keep that going. So,
well, when we were playing golf, we looked it up actually, and Coeur means heart. D'Alene means, it was a tool that I guess the Indians used years ago. So heart of the tool, which I guess, what's in a name? Who knows? But it was, I guess, it's a kind of a French kind of name for the town, but it's great that you've kind of maintained, you know, the name of the whole area. Attention to detail, the golf carts and the mahogany wood or whatever that, the burl wood, I guess it is, the steering wheel, it's just really cool.
Yeah, that was one thing that was important to us. Everything about when they were building the golf course, our ownership had a team that traveled all over to figure out what they liked about the golf and what they liked about the experience. And so he very much views the golf cart as a part of the experience here while you're on property. And it's harder as time has changed. Golf carts now are pretty customizable everywhere. You know, you can go to certain golf courses and you could gamble from the GPS. And so they certainly advance over time, but it's always been something important to us to make sure that golf cart is unique to the golf experience. And so just to kind of paint a picture of guests that stay at the property, you're staying on property with us, you stay at the hotel, and to get to our golf course, you actually walk down to the lobby, exit out by one of our bars, Whisper, and then there's a boat that picks you up. And so the boat brings you over to the golf course. The four caddies waiting for you. When you get off the boat, you hop into your golf cart, you go hit balls on the driving range. The driving range is a floating range, and so that's a unique experience. And then once you get to the number one tee, it's just a kind of created that experience, and it starts with the boat and then onto the golf cart. And you'll notice no trash cans on property. The restrooms are built into the soil. And again, it was all about the experience. And so Mr. Hagedorn spared no expense when it came to making that experience unique. And again, the golf carts are very important to that that part of the round.
And the rakes are underground as well.
Yeah, so you won't see any of the rakes for the bunkers. They are built into the ground. The four caddies get to utilize those rakes. Hopefully our guests aren't using them. But yeah, again, we wanted to make sure that it was very clean looking when you looked at the golf course. And if you just look out here, you're not going to see no trash, no debris, no rakes in the bunker. It's all that's been thought of. And that was something that was important to our ownership. And we've preserved that through today.
And so you take the boat from the resort actually to the golf course as well?
Absolutely. So you via boat, that's how you get here from the resort. And then when your round's over, you hop on the boat and boat back. And so it's a nice way to just get our guests on the water. Again, having that lake as part of our property is so important, and it's so beautiful, and we want to get folks on the water. And we thought, well, if we could start the golf round getting you on the water, we'll do that. And so it's been a unique thing that we've offered since we opened.
And how did you connect with this resort, Taylor?
So I'm originally from Texas. My wife and her family are from this area. And as we got married, we decided we wanted to figure out, you know, where do we want to raise a family? And so we actually visited here in May of 2014. And I call it the recruiting trip. I got to see all the great things about Coeur d'Alene. And then when we went back to Texas, I said, why don't we move up there? And so that's what planted us here 7 years ago, was that recruiting trip. And it's just a great place to raise a family. It's a slow pace. It's got everything that, you know, you would want or need. You can pretty much get anywhere from here as well. But yeah, it's a great place to live, to raise a family, and obviously a great place to work. I mean, this is quite the nice office to call home.
I love it. Not a bad office whatsoever. Thank you so much for sharing what you know about this beautiful resort, and thanks for having us as well.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here, and I look forward to spending more time with you on property, and thanks again for your consideration.
Taylor Four, who carded a +3 today. Not bad for somebody who's working all the time, Taylor.
Folks who I was playing with were fun to play with, and the four caddy did a great job, so it was nice to get out there and get to play.
Thanks again. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my honor to be talking to the former CEO and founder of Coeur d'Alene Casino Resort, Dave Matheson. Dave, I'm so glad you came into the cultural exhibition by chance, and your words really were very heartwarming, and I really want to try to get a sense of where we are and what this is all about. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Glad to be here. I enjoy people. I think we are all children of the same creator and the Mother Earth. We need to learn how to be good neighbors.
Definitely. Your words are very inspiring. Talk a little bit about the resort here, the casino, and how it all got started.
Well, I think we were fighting poverty since before my time on Earth, and 75 to 90% unemployment, and trying to raise our children with a semblance of hope that you could have an opportunity and be something, whatever you wanted to work for. You're empowered to make your own future. And we knew it wasn't totally true. If you had to move away to do something you wanted to do, what were you giving up and who are you really? And who would you become? So a lot of our young people didn't buy into that. So we had to find a way to create jobs, our own economy, and become empowered physically, materially, mentally, and spiritually to do what we set our minds to in the modern world.
And I just want to mention also that you are an elder with the tribe and on the council, mm-hmm. correct? And talk about your role with that.
Yeah, the tribal council is the governing body for the tribe. So they make the decisions about what they're going to do, what they're going to invest in, what the laws are, the courts, the programs, social services, the police enforcement actions, and the natural resources all go through the tribal council for our attention and priority action and protection. So it's a good responsibility, normally reserved for the elders, but in the modern era is subject to election like any other government in America.
What was it like growing up as a member of the Coeur d'Alene tribe?
Well, you know, I have to say, we didn't know any different. I guess the lake and the shade by the lake is our air conditioning, and the water is our life. It's the life of all of us. We've always been told that, and the land is here where the great creator put us, a native nation he created. He gave a separate language. He allowed a separate culture to grow, and how we could address him and our living of life. And so it was, in a way, wonderful. My parents never had, and grandparents never had, running water or electricity until I was probably a teenager. And we didn't know we were missing anything. We had fire in our wood stove, and they'd go hunting and fishing and have a garden and go gather berries and roots and fruit and things and make sure we had school clothes and somehow get by. And I don't know that, I guess you could say modern society is more comfortable, but I can't say that we're all just better because we have more and it's easier. We'd all rather have it easier than harder, but there's nothing wrong with hard work. And that's what I remember, people with deep faith working very hard and never, ever giving up no matter what.
Absolutely. And my have times changed, right? Really, so different. What has been the biggest change within the tribe since you were young?
Well, I think it has changed in many ways. Like every generation of the larger society becomes their own identity and what they focus on as a priority. And I'd say growing up, it became education. We got to send everybody to get an education, like the young people. And we did, but there wasn't any work for want to be a doctor or an engineer or a scientist or even a person in any other medical industry, whatever. There were no jobs here for it. So now there are jobs available. We've got first-class health care. We've got the education department. And I would say people get to really live their dream, but not to the degree that where I think everybody is included. So we have more work to do to make sure all the young people coming up can have a professional life if they want to, and a traditional life as well, and enjoy life through them both.
It must make you extremely satisfied, though, to see, you know, how you led this resort, casino, and the golf course, which I want to talk about as well. And, you know, there are more jobs for members of your tribe, right? And you have come a long way.
Yeah, I think, and then my grandchildren, they, it's all about high tech and how do we, what's the password for the Wi-Fi? And they're learning things and being influenced by things that maybe not are all good. I mean, we can all see that not everything that people see on their screens are helpful or healthy or right. And we don't want people to become so foolishly self-indulgent that they come to a point where they might hurt themselves or hold them their own self back. But know that life is also about, well, my grandparents used to say that there's nothing you can't do with a little bit of faith and lots of hard work. And I don't think that's going to change, whether we have technology or higher education or people foolish and self-indulgent or not. It will always be that way. We just have to make sure they never, ever forget.
That's a good point. Having, you know, being a hard worker and having an incredible work ethic, no matter how modern we are with technology and everything else, is just the key. How difficult was it to get the resort casino built here?
Well, that is a good example, I guess, of the little bit of faith and hard work. Three governors told me in Idaho that they're never going to allow casino gaming in Idaho by a tribe or anybody else. And I kind of maybe add to the story a little bit by saying three governors said, over my dead body, there'll be Indian gaming in Idaho. May they rest in peace. We took it to the people of Idaho in an initiative and got to lead that with a PR company to get signatures and get on the ballot and go around the state arguing and debating the opponents to try to bring it before the public view. And nearly 6% of Idaho voted in favor of an agreement with Coeur d'Alene Tribe and any tribe in Idaho to do casino gaming in Idaho, according to the terms of what we had put together. So it was a lot of work and a long fight that just wouldn't end. And we could see that we could be there another 10 years. We would never get Indian gaming unless we found another way to go about it. And so here it is, a hotel, a casino, and concerts and events, and the cultural demonstration exhibition that we just came from. Hotels are full. The restaurants are full usually. And we think people are happy. And I learned to really like managing a casino because it's just all about making people happy. And you can't always make people happy. And they people let you know about it when they gamble too much and you didn't let them win. You can't let anybody win, obviously, but you learn to deal with people. And I think that makes us all better human beings in our own right to try to understand more and more of each other.
So just going back, because I just want to understand, so it started in 1993, but when did the idea actually originate and how long, just to give us an idea of how long it did take for this to become reality?
I think I wrote the feasibility study and the market study in 1989, and I went to Washington, D.C. I ran the Bureau of Indian Affairs and some other departments or functions in Department of Interior in Washington, D.C. When I came back, the tribe wanted to go ahead and embark on this journey and build the gaming facility. We knew we could do a bingo hall, but even the state challenged the bingo hall. There was a fight all the way that we probably just shouldn't have anything at all. And we just stood up to it. Maybe we can't, but my grandpa would say, you won't fight with the war club and the knife and the spear and the gun anymore, but you're going to fight with the word and with the pen and with the spoken belief about what we really are, where we really come from, what it's really all about. So I try to take that to heart. And I think if they were here today, they would say, we did good.
Oh, absolutely. You did good. We're here on a golf media trip, so I have to talk about Circling Raven, which I just love, mostly the expansiveness of the land. It is on over 600 acres, and there are no homes. There's no housing development there, which is so rare in golf. It's just so refreshing to be on a golf course where it's all natural beauty. I was looking for a moose, could not find one, but I understand that they're out there plenty, but talk a little bit about how the golf course got started.
Well, we knew, always knew that a golf course and a casino resort kind of go together. You can fill the golf course, fill the hotel rooms. People want something to do at night. They go together very well. And we offered an RFP, request for proposals, from some of the golf design companies and construction companies to make us a bid about how they could build a golf course here. We had two sites that they looked at. And most everybody told us you shouldn't build it where it's at. That's kind of like a national park. It's beauty and it's grandeur and majesty. And so the chairman and I walked through it again. We thought, well, this is our country. It's kind of like, it's all beautiful. It's all majestic and wonderful. And we thought it's got the wetland in the middle and then the trees and forests and open meadows and then the farmland around it and the mountains around that. And I went to look at some of the famous golf courses in the West Coast and California and Florida. And I tried to understand what is the mystique that they can get to charge the fees that they do and master the kind of interest they get and adoration from golfers. And I looked at ours and I thought, I think the opportunity here is nature. So if we don't build any homes, no condos, we don't over-commercialize it. I have pictures of elk, deer, and eagles, trees, and hawks, and it's a beautiful place and a natural experience you can't get at any other golf course. So I think it's become very well known for that fact.
It absolutely is. The terrain is so varied and beautiful, and the variety. And then when the wind picks up, it's very difficult. It can be very challenging. Are you a golfer yourself?
I learned to golf so I could build that course. And after we built it, I gave it up just because I had to. It takes a lot of time to golf, and but I learned to play. And the chairman and I wanted to be the first ones to play. So the day that the greenskeepers gave the go ahead, we'll pick an opening date, and you can go ahead and play. And the chairman can go and play. We went over there. I made it around maybe four holes. Had to come back and buy more golf balls. So it's a very challenging course. A resort course, you could just, kind of hit it into the other fairway and then wave at people, hit it back in and keep going. This one, you go off our fairway, it's gone. You take your stroke, take another shot, and take the hit. So it's a real course. So when I won't say I'm a professional golfer, near that. When your score grows from the 70s to maybe upper 80s and low 90s, just because it's a real course. It's real golf.
It definitely is. I mean, if you lose a ball in the high fescue, it's very, slim chance of finding that ball for sure. The Symetra Tour is going to be here in August, the feeding tour into the LPGA. So that's a huge event, and I understand it's going to be here for the next 3 years. So congratulations on getting the Symetra Tour tournament.
Yeah, we've had some big groups here, NFL groups and big tournaments, and I think people from down south and over back east and around the world are coming here to play golf, and they all say the same thing. They've never seen anything like it, and I think the lady pro golfers will love it too.
They certainly will. I'm excited to get their reaction when they come and play here and have that opportunity. So this evening we experience the cultural exhibition with men and women and young people in the costume from years ago. What does it mean to you when you see those kinds of things?
I think in our native way, I mean, the feelings, expressions you can't put into words, we can sing them and we can dance them. And our oneness with the earth and our maybe thankfulness for our parents and grandparents, our families and folks, for our culture and tradition, and to maybe with the attitude, find some place where maybe our ancestors felt what they sang and danced and kind of enjoy that. And the sun flickering off the lake and like to the beat of a drum almost into a dance. And we can still find great strength, power is a difficult word to define and use, but a power and a strength and all that kind of maintains us like a rudder in life, where we know the Creator promised no one a tomorrow, promised no one an easy time, but while we're here, by God, we can shake hands, be one all together, and enjoy life.
That's such a great message, such a universal message that needs to be heard more and more. What's your role with the tribe now? Give us an idea of you know, what do you do on a daily basis, and you know, what maybe your goals are for the future.
I do all the development analysis and work for the tribe for new businesses. We want to diversify, get into more things and more professional opportunity for young people who are going to high school and college now, so when they get out, they can work in the profession of their choice. And I think that's very, very important. So I spend all my time in that. We have three or four new ones that I'd like to put together, and hopefully I can. And I'll be 70 years old here coming up, and I want to do something that leaves something special here for the people that they can enjoy, that I can enjoy, whatever the forever world is.
My last question, sir, what has been, not a secret to your success, but what has maybe been the reason for your successes?
I think there's a divine inspiration, a divine intervention. If the native tribes can grab the bull by the horns, overcome all the hardships that have been piled on them, and with independence and a spirit of maybe never ever give up, I think there's nothing that we can't do even now. And it seemed like everything that I did was here was blessed. It was ordained that it could be, but I'm not going to get it on a silver platter. It's going to take a lot of hard work. And so the new projects that I'm doing are like that too. I think the good things are going to happen for us. We just have to keep going.
What does America need to do now at this point to reach any of your objectives?
Well, America, we always felt, we know that no group or types of people have been treated rougher or wronger or whatever you want to call it, than Native people. We were told this is your land forever, Indian land forever, and your rights to live here and live your way. And then before the ink got dry, start taking things away. Now we own, we're the minority owners of land on our own reservation. All we need is to be given a chance to just let us go and excel on our own. Don't get in the way anymore. But no other group of people on a percentage or per capita basis has gone to fight for this country more than Native people. My father, 3 years in World War II, the front lines on the Pacific Islands. And because we knew that freedom and justice for all touches everybody, including our people, and those of the world that don't have it know that it's a sacred miracle that they don't have, but only can wish that they do. So I think if America would just give us a chance to thrive on our own, we will thrive, we will prosper, and we will do right for our place in America.
Thanks so much for joining me. It's truly an honor.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to Gene Bates, Taylor Fore, and to David Matheson, and to Delaney Hefner in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Be safe, be kind, and I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Ann LaGorrie.